Good evening, and welcome to the Caroline and Joseph Grist Center at Yeshiva University in Israel. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Mr. Alan Rosen and Shvut Ami for partnering with us in this great initiative and for publishing this memorable Sefer, Rakafot Aharon, Volume 3. Rabbi Rekava will remain after his talk to sign books that will be available tonight for purchase. We're thrilled to see all of you here tonight to celebrate yet another in a long line of personal achievements for our beloved Rebbe, Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, and for all of us at YU and YU in Israel. As a student of Rabbi Rakefet's and married to a student of Rabbi Rakefet's, it is truly a privilege to host this event. This building has been Rabbi Rakefet's home away from home for 40 years now, and so it is quite apropos and natural that this event should take place here at Grus. On this campus, the very concept of Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah is manifested every day. All of Rabbi Rakefet's shiurim are well attended and are uploaded immediately to YU Torah, which is itself maintained in this very building. This jewel in the crown of Yeshiva University is the seat of our Reitz Israel Kollel, where Rabbi is a Ram, Rosh Yeshiva, preparing our young Musmachim for their roles of service of the Jewish people across the globe. Our proud alumni gather here frequently for events and lectures and to connect in a meaningful way to our alma mater. And each year, over 2,000 students that are visiting Israel for the year and studying here come to campus here to listen to YU Torah luminaries, to enrich their year in Israel, and to prepare for an amazing college experience back at YU. We're very proud of the presence that we have here in Eretz Yisrael and what that means to so many. And we're proud that this is Rabbi Rakefet's home. But we certainly do not exist in a vacuum, and our important work and our success is dependent on many colleagues who are based at YU in New York. We are fortunate to work closely with members of the YU administrative team who make my job easy, who infuse our purpose here with nobility, and who make sure that we thrive here at our beloved campus in Jerusalem. Visiting from New York is our Vice President for Legal Affairs and our General Counsel, my dear friend and colleague, Mr. Avi Lauer. And Avi is also a longtime student of Rabbi Rakefet as well, and therefore I'm honored to ask him to say a few words of introduction.
So good evening. Thank you all for joining. It's a special privilege to be here. I just happened to be here on business this week. I heard about the event and thought I'd come here and just share a couple of words of introduction. First of all, I want to thank our director of Yeshiva University in Israel, Stephanie Strauss, who really makes everything run here today with her, or here in this campus, together with her amazing staff. I've had the opportunity to work with them, and all the things that you see going on here in Israel don't just happen. There's a tremendous team of professionals here who are doing a lot of that work. So I'll leave the Torah to the professional, but I do want to point out this week we're going to read the Shabbos Parshas Noach, and the Parsha begins, Ela told us Noach, Noach, Ish Tzadik, Tamim Hayab Darasav. There are a lot of mefarshim on why that is and why how that's phrased, but a number of psukim later, when Hashem is talking to Noach, he says, Ki itcha reisi tzadik lifanav badar azeh. And the question that arises is, what happened in a couple of psukim? It says tzadik tamim, and just a couple of psukim later, it's downgraded to tzadik. And Rashi, as many of you may know, points out that the reason why Hashem downgraded the description is because you're not supposed to praise someone in their presence. So I'll praise Rabbi Rakefet by virtue of just two anecdotes that were personal to me. Rabbi Rakefet goes way back with my family, with my wife's family, with many, many members of our family, as he does with a lot of people. Hundreds of thousands of people follow Rabbi Rakefet. But I'll give you just two examples. About 20 years ago, my father, Rabbi Elias Lauer, passed away. And we were sitting Shiva, and I was only 29 at the time. I didn't really remember Rabbi Rakefet that well, but my brother and sister were there. Rabbi Rakefet walked into the Shiva house, And he happened to be in New York. He walked in and he said, I was in New York, I had to come and pay a shiva call. So we were very pleased and honored that he came and paid a shiva call. But knowing the teacher and scholar that he is, he didn't just come to pay a shiva call. He waited for about an hour and a half till we davened mincha and gave a fairly lengthy shiur, most people stayed, between mincha and maariv. And that was, you know, an honor to have him there to give a shiur. The next night and the following night when he did the same thing, we realized that it was really a special relationship that he had, and we were truly honored by that. And he really went out of his way. He was there visiting, and he came three nights in a row to give a shiur at our shiva at the shiva house for my father. The next time, I just remember a very interesting story about Rabbi Rakefet. I happened to be in Florida on vacation, and I was with my family in Miami Beach, and the president of the Marlins happens to be on the board of trustees of Yeshiva University, and the chairman is on the board of Yeshiva College. And I got a call, I heard you're going to be in Miami Beach. We'd like to give you a tour of the new Marlins Stadium. So I gather my family together, and we all go to Marlins Stadium, and it's sort of a really unique opportunity to see the inner workings of a stadium like that. And we show up, and who's there but the biggest baseball fan in history, Rabbi Rakefet. Now, Marlins Stadium has something very interesting. As you walk through the halls, there are pictures, historic pictures of the baseball industry. And Rabbi Rakefet literally stopped at every single picture. It's as if he knew every single player there personally and gave us an inside tour of Marlins Stadium and all that memorabilia. The Torah knowledge and the gem that he is that you all know, that you all know. But, you know, these are just two anecdotes that personally meant something to me. We're honored to have Rabbi Rakefet amongst the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva University, and the Reitz Kollel. We have just the jewels of the Jewish community within Yeshiva University, and it's an honor for us to have Rabbi Rakefet as amongst them. I, on behalf of President Joel and the administration and the Rabbi Penner and the Reitz Kollel, I'd like to wish Rabbi Rakefet a mazel tov on the launch of this book and invite him up here to say a few words of chizuk to us.
First of all, I don't know if the Vice President realizes we have to be brief tonight. The World Series, game number 6, Cleveland. Those of you listening across the world probably are wondering how Israelis, I'm living here on the 50 years now, and yet we're right with it, Chicago, Cleveland. But the answer is very simple. Lech lecha miyatzlecha mimolodecha mibeit avicha. The order is wrong. When you leave America, you leave your father's house first. Then you leave the city, the state. And only afterwards do you leave the land. And yet here, the Pasuk says, Lech lecha miyatzlecha mimolodecha beit avicha. The order is wrong. But it's talking about the psychological leaving. And in this audience, I know many people intimately and their aliyah. And that's the most difficult part, to leave America, Obama versus Trump, without taking sides. Nishta zegefelech, not so hot. To leave greater New York City, all right. But the Beit Avicha, how you grew up, the team you rooted for, Yankee Stadium, that's the hardest. And Baruch Hashem, today it's very easy because we all have computers. My students right here in this building taught me how to use a computer. I was over 70 at the time I learned. But I can tell the young women here, I said to him, my mother, Zichrona Levracha, learned when she was over 70. So I think I can do it too. Nope, with the computer, you're right there. This volume is a covered to my students, to Yeshiva, to Reitz, to this Kollel. To the best of my knowledge, it's the first time a volume has appeared that is totally based upon the classes that were given in this building. And how it came about is very fascinating. Number one, let me tell you a personal story. When I was the Makkah B'Patash, the final hammer, and God privileged me to say the right words to Mr. Joe Gruss, and I redeemed this campus for Yeshiva University, it was already in the hands of David Yellen's Teachers College. Teddy Kolek put a lot of pressure on Mr. Gruss. The Rav wasn't coming, Mr. Gruss was upset. And I said to Mr. Gruss, among other things, and you can read about it in my seventh book, Washington, that Mr. Gruss, if the Rav's students are teaching here, it's like the Rav is teaching here. And there was a whole little dialogue we had, and at the end of it, a young kid out of the Bronx and a multi-billionaire from Poland cried on each other's shoulders. And thank God the rest is history, and you heard what's going on in this building. So this volume, Shayurim, the boys asked me to start teaching here when a formal program began. I made a cheshbon hanefesh, what am I going to teach? Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein is teaching Gemara. No, I know how to find any Gemara. The Rav taught me how. Big deal. Reb Byron knew every Gemara by heart. He didn't have to find it. He had that type of memory. I'm not going to rival Reb Byron. They had other teachers for Yoredeya. So I decided to go into an area where no one else has ever lectured to the best of my knowledge, combining my knowledge of Shas and Peskim and my doctorate in Jewish history. I got involved in responsa literature, and it caught on. Their courses being given elsewhere today, they're an emulation of what began right here in this building in the 70s. Now you start teaching, and students come, students go, and certain students were very attached. And I don't repeat myself. My lectures are ongoing. I haven't repeated a lecture, neither in my Sunday class in responsa literature or my Monday class, which has been in philosophy, the Rav, now in history of Torah in the United States. And students, friends, colleagues, rabbis wanted to hear these lectures. So I started recording them, and I would make 3 copies and send them on to the United States. Unknown to me, at a certain point, a gentleman in Queens started an entire business, not that he made money, but he made available tapes of the Rav, tapes of others, and he picked up the tapes I was sending to one of the rabbis in Queens. And these tapes started circulating, and we held on to them. And then one of the great advancements, inventions, I'm still overwhelmed what you have on the computer, what you can find, so much Torah, Gedolei Yisrael, videos of Gedolei Yisrael, the Chafetz Chaim, what we have today. So, why you began, whyutorah.org, and they wanted Shayurim from the Kollel. There's a student sitting here, John Fisher. John, I want you to please rise. The people should see you. John was my student many years ago, although he has a young wife, Baruch Hashem, and a young child, Tanayin Hara Mazal Tov. But you should know that John devoted years to breaking down the tapes into a computer program that later goes on to YUTorah.org. I believe the early shiurim are from the early 1990s, if I'm not mistaken, and those shiurim are only there because of what you did, John. And now I'm modela kaddish baruch hu that I can say thank you to you. Then something else happened. A student came over to me a few minutes ago and Shalom Aleichem, Rebbe, a pleasure to meet you. I'm one of your virtual students. I've come in Aliyah. All right, I'm happy to hear that. I had a bit of influence. He left the Moledet. But much more important, he left his father's house, and he's now at the home of the Jewish people. Many students are listening. One student was already listening. He picked up tapes that were coming out of Queens 20, 25 years ago. I never met him. I didn't know this was happening. He happens to be a brilliant individual, a PhD from MIT, works in Princeton, has smicha. Some of you know his sidekick and chavruta when growing up and when learning with Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein in the Gush. His name happens to be Rabbi Asaf Bednash. Is that name familiar to you who learn in the Kollel? Rabbi Bednash came over to me about 10 years ago and he said, Rabbi Rakefet, my old friend chavruta, emailed me. Could he possibly email you and contact you? I look, what am I, a Rebbe surrounded by Gabayim? I don't have the email. I told him, you emailed the secretary here, Sherry. The emails that come to me, she prints out, and Baruch Hashem. That's what he did. And he asked permission to add to my Sheyurim all the esoteric sources that I quote as an appendix to the Sheyurim on YU Torah. So I gladly said yes, and over the years I have upstairs in my office thousands of pages of sources that Dr. Yaakov Weinstein prepared. Then he asked me a number of years ago, could I write up some of your Sheyurim. And I have to tell you, he's not the first one to ask me that. About three or four people have asked me over the years to write up this Sheyurim, that Sheyurim. I always say yes. Other people began, never went further. Yaakov began, and you'll see the results tonight. So I want to express a great debt of gratitude to Dr. Yaakov Weinstein, Rabbi Doctor. He's in Princeton at this hour, but from Yerushalayim, we thank him. In our world today, the greater YU world, there is a tremendous controversy going on. The statement was made perhaps 20 years ago, and people quote it as if it's the Vahashem Zu Halacha. I quote the statement to you. If there's a rabbinic will, there is a halachic way. May I quote it again? If there is a rabbinic will, there is an halachic way. You know what that statement is saying? That Torah and observance is a product of the human being, the human mind. Rabbis, if they will it, can do as they wish. In my humble opinion, as someone who has lived for 3,500 plus years and has been learning Torah day and night for over 70 years. I have grandchildren here who can testify. And as one who is privileged to speak and learning and learn with Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael of the previous generation, Rav Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and of course, Mori Rebbe Hamufhak. When I mention his name, I tremble. Mori Rebbe HaRav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. This concept is in total, complete abrogation, negation of what Torah is about. Torah begins with Naseh B'Nishma. The human being surrenders to a higher authority. We told the Almighty we are willing to accept and live with the Torah. When it comes to Torah, Torah commands, demands obedience, surrender. May I quote Mori Rebbe to Rav Soloveitchik? Chazal referred to Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, that we accept a yoke from heaven. And Moriah Rebbe asked a simple question: why do we need the yoke? We can say Kabbalat Malchut Shemayim, we accept God. But at times it's a yoke. We live in two worlds. Again, I'm not going to do everything here. You've listened to my tapes, my shayurim. I repeat this, quote Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, but it's a reality. We're influenced by the Western world today. Korach asked those famous questions. Talit shekulo tchelet, logic, a talit that's entirely blue, do you need tzitzit? Moshe Rabbeinu said yes. Korach mocked him, laughed at him, decried him. And who was right? You cannot approach Torah with common sense. The Western world, Obama, the United States Supreme Court, some of our friends, colleagues, neighbors, brothers, right here in the state of Israel, they live in a different world than we do, intellectually. They live in a world, the Western world, the world centers around man. You're the arbiter, you can decide. Torah is exactly the opposite. When it comes to Torah, we surrender. Yes, it doesn't mean that there are no innovations and there are no chidushim, but everything has to be done within the confines of the Torah. The fence of the Torah, the frame of the Torah, the misgeret ha-Toranit. The Gemara in Chulin Daf Zayin says, Makom hinichu lo avotav lehit gaderbo. You can ask a simple question. How can Aaron Rakefet / Ani Rothkopf give shayurim, people come, people listen, among them Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbonim, Dayanim, kid from the Bronx, Yankee fan. He has something to say. He has something to innovate, lechadesh. Yes. Mokom hinichu lo avotav. It's an amazing Gemara. That as great as the earlier generations were, each generation can be mechadesh, can do something new, something different, something innovative. But it must be within the Torah system. And when we can't solve the problem, there's nothing we can do. We have to raise our hands and bow to the divine will. And those of you familiar with my two volumes on Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, which is interesting, 15 years after they appeared, people are starting to appreciate them. With everything else that has appeared, suddenly they can judge a little bit more, in my eyes, properly. And Moriah Rebbe tells the famous story. Rabbanim, how he tells Rabbanim, you have to do everything possible to help the people, and you have to be learned, and you have to have Yirat Shemayim. But people ask a question, you have to understand the sociological background and see what you can do to help if possible. But at times he says, I'm quoting my Rebbe now, Moriah Rebbe, word by word, you all know I come from rabbinic house, Beit Harav, Brisk, Voloshin. And Reb Chaim was a great mekil, where he could be lenient, he could be lenient. You all know, when it comes to treifas, with shchita, with bedika, Reb Chaim was one of the greatest mekilim, lenient. But at times, you just can't be lenient. There's no way you can find a solution. He gave a very interesting, but a very emotional and sad example of a young Jewish man on college campus, postgraduate, totally alienated American family. All of you know what's going on in America when the Secretary of State, Kerry, whose real name is Cohn, when his father married a Christian, he changed his name from Cohn to become a Bal Kerry. And Kerry is a direct descendant of Rabbeinu Yehuda, the brother of the Maharal Miprag. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, this is America. So this kid is in graduate school, and he meets a lady who was born a Catholic, and she got interested in Judaism, and she converted and became a Shomeret Torah Mitzvot, and they started speaking to each other, attracted to each other, and she brought him back to Yiddishkeit. And then he went to the cemetery to check his roots. And he took a picture of the tombstone of his grandfather, his father's father, and the split fingers. And he thought it was some messianic symbol. He didn't know what it was, but he showed the picture to his rabbi. And the rabbi told him, "You're a Kohen." And the rabbi told him, "You're a Kohen. What does that mean?" And here he's going with a woman who's a Gioret. And the Gioret is forbidden to her Kohen. They came to Rabbi Soloveitchik. And the Rav said, "What could I do? There's no solution. This is the halacha." I quote Rebbe, "She walked away and she had to start all over again in finding a mate." But if there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. This is impossible, because the first part of answering the question, Shas and Poskim, Yirat Shemayim, what are the sources? Then what can we apply? Now, I'm going to be very brief. Every word I say, you find elaboration in the volume and all the sources. But there are two areas where the rabbis are enjoined to try their best to be lenient. One is the classic Aguna, Ad kidei kach, that the Bach says, Kol hamatir Aguna achat, that if a rabbi can permit one Aguna to remarry, it's like building a new area, a new section, Shkuna chadasha, Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Just think what that means. The other area, of course, is Mamzeret, where the Medrash Rabbah says the tears of the oppressed are the tears of a Mamza. Why should he suffer for a sin his parents did? And the rabbis are enjoined, do your best to see if you can be lenient, if you can help them within the halachic system. And here, I resent very much, you hear on all sides, the rabbis are cruel. If the women were paskening, they would find solutions. This is an affront to the Torah history and why we are sitting here, and why we are sitting in a building where a kollel functions, and the most technical name of the kollel is the kollel of Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan, the Jerusalem branch on the Gruss campus. Who is Rabbi Isaac Elchanan Spector? Let's talk about the person for whom this institution is named. I yet knew people who met Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, the Rav of Kovna, the posek of the entire Jewish world 110, 120, 150 years ago. And in his 5 volumes of responsa literature, there is no topic he worked on harder, with more caution and more dedication and more sweat and more tears, than lahatir aguna, to be able to permit an aguna. And I can tell you, as a result of what Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan did, tens of thousands of women, if not hundreds of thousands, since his death in 1896, the rabbanim have been able to permit to remarry. And before I explain to you why, and that's the heart of today's lecture, that you'll have something tangible, Let me tell you a little story about Reb Yitzchok Hanan. By the way, Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shimoff, if there's anyone in the audience who remembers that name from the American rabbinate, Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shimoff, in his doctorate on Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan's Spekta, he tells the story. But I've seen it recorded in many other sources. Reb Hanan was an elderly gentleman already, and some of you are my age level, and you know, you get older, you're weaker, you need more sleep, you have to pace yourself. And his son, who was a great gaon, the Mitava Rav, Reb Tzvi Hirsch, had a different name, Reb Tzvi Hirsch Rabinovitz. If you want to know why the father and son had different names, remind me at the end of the lecture, I'll tell you why. But let me keep to the topic now. So the Mitava Rav came to visit his father. It was 12 o'clock at night. I said, Tata, Medafken Shlafen Yetz. Father was working away, writing. The books were all open, and he told him, you have to go to sleep. So he went to sleep. You listen to your children. He's in the other room. 2 o'clock in the morning, he hears his father is up, the light is on, his father's at his desk. And he goes back, he says, Tata, what are you doing? I told you to go to sleep. And his father says, the aguna in teshina hat menishkelas shlafen. The aguna in my pocket, the question that he had to answer. I couldn't go to sleep till I permitted her and wrote the responsum explaining why. And what Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan did, and again, all the sources are in Rakafat Aram Chelegimel. What Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan did, you see, in the early 1200s, a boat capsized off the Italian coast in the Mediterranean. Many Jewish men were never heard from again. They left living widows. It's in the Mordechai. It's one of the last of the Balei Tosfot, Reb Yitzchok Meiverona. One of the last of the Balei Tosfot wrote a tshuva to permit the women to remarry. There are two versions, either 3 years went by, 7 years went by, because it's quite clear logically that if people are on a boat that crashes, a plane that goes down in the ocean, and you don't hear from them, they have not survived. Now, this goes back to Gemara and Yuvama, Taf Kuf Chaf Aleph, Taf Kuf Chaf Bet, but miracles happen. The Gemara relates that Rabbi Akiva, another version is Rabbi Meir, were on a boat that capsized. They were sitting shiva for them already, and they got on a piece of wood from the boat and rode that wood over the waves, came to shore, the middle of shiva. The deceased walks in. But Chazal say, if that's the case, we cannot depend upon logic here, we cannot depend upon the majority of people on a boat die, a boat that crashes, capsizes, sinks, people on a plane, majority, you can't depend upon it because miracles happen. So Chazal introduced the concept that you cannot use that type of logic, that type of majority, when you are dealing with an aguna. And the other Rishonim were very upset with this concept. How can you be mater? How can you permit? They were very upset with Reb Yitzchok Meiverona, with his decision. So they may or may not have followed it. But if I can quote Seinfeld, they put this decision into the safe. They locked it up. It's there in the safe. It's what we call in rabbinic Hebrew a shita d'chuya, a viewpoint that we rejected, but it's a viewpoint of a rishon. Reb Yitzchok Elchanan comes along, and he's not the first one, but he developed it into an entire theory and gave us a way how to operate with this theory. And Reb Yitzchok Elchanan said, times have changed today. A person disappears, In his time already, there were telegraphs. There was international mail. Imagine today, telephones, fax machines, emails. Wow, what you have today, computers. So Yitzchak Chanan developed the concept, there's not just one majority here. There are two majorities. He gave it the technical name, Trei Rubei, two majorities. And nothing in the world stands in the face of two majorities. And now you can take any case. Plain one down in the ocean. This is the famous Shiloh. Those of you who know one of the great American rabbis, Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld, his wife, her first marriage was headlines. He was a businessman. And on a Saturday night, a lot of business people in November, when Shabbat ends early, were on a flight for trade, import-export in South America, and that plane went down right out of the New York Harbor. And Gedolei Yisrael were called upon. Can the women remarry? Reb Moshe has a whole tshuva. And immediately, Reb Yitzchak Chanan's concepts came to the fore. Number one, the majority of people who drown in the Atlantic Ocean, the plane goes down, they do not survive. Number two, if he had survived, he would have contacted his wife by now. The fact that he didn't survive is a sign, Reb Yitzchak Meverdun or Verona, of Vad Zichro. That's the rubric it's called in Halacha. His memory is forgotten. He is gone. And again, two majorities. The Trade Center, Lo Aleinu, and Islamic terrorism hit America full force. And by the way, I lost students in that building. Students of mine from Gold, from BMT. There was a fella there, his life was saved by miracles, a Gris Kollel graduate, because he was late in coming to work that morning because he had been at his shir in Choshen Mishpat. And when he got out of the subway, the first building was hit, quickly went down again, and went out, and his life was saved. He was learning Torah, and he was late. No, I know from Jews who were in that building who called their wives to say goodbye. Bodies recovered, parts of bodies today, DNA, bodies not recovered altogether. Could the women remarry? Absolutely. If the husband was in the building, when the buildings went down, the overwhelming majority did not survive. Number two, had they survived, they would have contacted their wives by now. And here you have to use a lot of halachic common sense. How long do you have to wait? It's very fascinating. After World War II, they tried to wait 2-3 years to be certain that the people were not alive. After the towers crashed, at the end of 30 days, if you were certain the man was in the building and he did not contact his wife, you could be certain that he was dead. And this concept, Trei Rubei, double majority, Reb Yitzchak Chanan Spekta. Innovation within the halachic framework, within the halachic context. When it comes to Mamzeret, there's a lot of material on the book dealing with a case that happened right here in Israel when I was in my original years here, a very difficult experience. It caused anguish, enmity, hatred. And that, of course, the story of the Langer children. And to tell the story very briefly, a Jewish lady from Poland fell in love with a Polish Catholic in Poland. She came from a frum Hasidic family. Father was besides himself. His daughter is marrying a non-Jew. He converted the son-in-law. The father, private conversion. At least that's what some people claimed. They later came to Israel and they got divorced. They were separated, but she never got a get. She later remarries a Jewish man, a Talmud Chacham, a Rav, performed the marriage. Two children were born from that marriage. They later served in the Israeli army. And both the son and daughter are now ready to marry, and they have fiancés. And are they allowed to marry? If there was a conversion, the first husband was Jewish. She needed a get. This rabbi who performed the second wedding was a Talmud Chacham. He considered the first husband a Polish Catholic. And this case became a cause celebre because the Beit Din, the original Beit Din was in Petach Tikva. You can read all the details in the book. Didn't permit them to marry, considered them mamzerim. They went to the chief rabbi of the IDF, Rabbi Shlomo Gorin, and he did his research, came up with an entire book permitting them to remarry. He came up with documents from the Tel Aviv social department of the city that dealt with social cases, how this family constantly had problems, the original family, and how the social workers would work with them and visit them in the 1930s, and time and again you saw that they wrote the Polish guy in relation to the father. There was testimony that he ate chasa, that occasionally he went to church on Sunday. There was testimony that at a funeral he crossed himself when the body went past him. You all understand, a conversion is worthless if you walk away from the conversion and you're still eating chaza and crossing yourself as if you are still a Catholic. And Rabbi Gorin developed many doubts, many sveikot, and it got involved in a tremendous battle here where politics took over. And I want to tell you, if there's one message from that discussion of the Langer case in this volume, and you have all the details, the pro, the con, what happened, etc., it's a very contemporary message. Keep politics out of halacha. Today in the state of Israel, you have two areas where you don't get halacha, you get politics. Ask a posek, can I say Hallel on Yom Atzmaut? No. Depends. Say Hallel Yom Atzmaut. That Ben Gurion had the guts to stand up to the American State Department and declare a state of Israel against the will of America? You should say Hallel three times over on Yom Atzmaut. Nishtemal. And the longer you live here, the more you want to say Hallel. When you see who's running the country in Vaske Donda and who the heck is sitting in prison, believe me, you got to say Hallel with real kavana. Baruch Hashem. But you're going to get an answer. You're going to get an answer. You're going to get politics. Give you another example. Yontif Sheni. Yontif Sheni. I lectured in the Kollel for a year and a half on Yontif Sheni. Someone was listening with the original tapes that were circulating. He was so impressed with the lectures, he contacted me, a man of means, and he gives to poor people, wanted me to give out tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I told him I don't have time for that, but I put my one of my daughters in charge. And this man gave a fortune of money to victims of Arab terror, to people that have tragedies, and all because of my lectures on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiyot. But Ribbono Shel Olam, you're observing Yom Tov Sheni in Israel, making brachot, making kiddush, lighting candles with brachot, when Aaron Rakefet is driving his car, using his computer, writing Chidushei Torah. Ribbono Shel Olam, can I quote the Rav to you? When Irwin Shapiro asked the Rav, Rebbe, I just bought an apartment in Israel, what do I do for Yom Tov Sheni? And the Rav, only the Rav could talk like this. Irwin, you can't fold Kedusha into your pocket. I repeat, you can't fold Kedusha into your pocket. In New York, there's Yom Tov Sheni. In Israel, there's no Yom Tov Sheni. All right. It's a different question. How do we paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? In Gris Kolel, I dealt with that little question, how we paskin against the Shulchan Aruch with Yom Tov Sheni for 1.5 years. You're invited to listen whyutorah.org. So there's a very potent message. But let me go further. Ad kan, the World Series, and dealing with topics like Aguna and Mamzeret, unlike my previous 7 volumes, it's the first time I've gone into the World Series, into the big leagues. This is Davar Hashem Zu Halacha. But there's something else I want to say tonight, and I also want to express my thanks for Yaakov Weinstein for going along with me. Some of you know that in May of 1980, a branch of the Mossad tapped me on the shoulder. And they said to me, Rav Rakefet, without going into all details, you can read about it in Washington, are you willing to teach Talmud in Russia? We need someone to teach in this Siruvnik, Refusnik community. And I answered yes. And that just changed my life, my wife's life, my children's lives, and many of my students, including people sitting here, their lives would change. Subsequently, for the next 10 years till communism fell, I was responsible for the study of Talmud in the Refusnik community. Well, you don't know what Russia was like, communist Russia. Till I went to Russia, the first time, I always found fault with democracy, and I could quote from Alex de Tocqueville's critique, which was before the Civil War, word by word. A lawyer knows what I'm talking about. You know what Jonathan Polat, your family's involved with my Talmud, Jack Semmelman. You know what Polat has gone through. That's democracy. But boy, after you see communist Russia, you come into the airport, pitch dark, troops marching up and down, guns loaded, till you get in, till they search you, body search. And you finally find the synagogue where you're told in advance you can't talk freely. There are agents all over the place, Jewish agents as well, or lower lane. You see what communism is like, it's overwhelming. If anyone would have told me, Aaron, in 30, 35 years, you're going to be teaching kids who grew up in Russia. They're studying for smicha. If anyone would have told me, I just saw an item today that I believe there are 30 different shuls today in Moscow. 3 new shuls were just dedicated. There was one, I'll use KGB terminology, one functioning shul and one functioning church was left in every community. The Alta Babushka, she's stupid enough to believe in religion? Let her go. Show the world we have freedom of religion here. A kid of 13, if you made a bar mitzvah, you were sent to Siberia for coercing a kid to be religious. It's mind-boggling what communist Russia was. And what a great miracle has happened. In the Kollel today, in the shiur I gave yesterday, the day before, two young men are sitting in front of me. Yosef Mordechai Gachman, Avraham Rachamim, one born raised in Kiev, one Bukharin but born and raised in Moscow, came to America teenagers, wind up in Gris Kollel. Some unbelievable miracle. The return of the Russian Jew to the Jewish people, all sparked by the State of Israel. It's another reason to add another Hallel to Yom HaTzmaut. When I came back the first time from Russia, I was overwhelmed. You didn't know what to do. My wife and I, we saw Jews. We couldn't speak aloud. We couldn't tell. We had to find candidates. Everything was secret. We lived a dual existence, a normal existence by day and a secret agent by night. Meeting with people, cajoling people, security checks, sending people, preparing people. And one of the acts that I got involved with was building a center for Russian Jewry, spiritual outreach. Let me make it clear, no one has done for Russian Jewry what Chabad has done. It is overwhelming how they kept alive the flames through all the years from 1917 on. Endless Chabadnikim were executed or exiled. The seventh Rebbe's father, Reb Levi Yitzchak, died in exile as a result of all the torture he underwent. I have encouraged Chabadnikim to write books, do an encyclopedia, the names, the people, what they suffered. Don't take any credit away from Chabad. But not every Jew is attracted via Chabad. There's a more Litvish way. Tam v'reach, ein lehitvakeach. So Rabbi Levine's grandson, Reb Leza Kugel, a Yid HaTzadik, should live and be well, hitting his 90s today. We organized Shvut Ami for Russian Jewry. And over the years, what Shvut Ami has accomplished, what Shvut Ami has done, I can give you one little story. I was invited to a bar mitzvah of a child born to a Russian couple. Shvut Ami, these people. There were 200 people at the bar mitzvah. 196 people of Russian origins, and four Anglos, myself, my wife, and a couple that I had sent to Russia, among my most successful shluchim, the late lamented Reb Shlomo Merzel, the principal of Chorev, and his wife, Rifki. And we were very active, and this family felt a debt to us, and we come to this bar mitzvah, everyone is speaking Russian, we're speaking English, and then I look around, 196 couples divided in half, every last man had a beard. Two Americans are sitting there, schgutzen, pushtakin, clean shaven. Two Americans. And then they give an announcement, Tfilat Mariv b'mistaron. The men will go outside to daven in the hallway, Tfilat Mariv. And these Russians, with every type of kippah, they're davening. You might have thought it was Erev Yom Kippur. We Americans, Ribbono Shel Olam, we were ashamed the way we daven compared to these Russians. So great, great miracles have happened. And I'm caught up in it until today. I'm proud to tell you at this moment, Shvut Ami has something like 72, 73 shluchim in Russia, in every city except Leningrad. What is Leningrad today? Petersburg. It used to be St. Petersburg. Why aren't we in St. Petersburg? That city is owned by Chabad. That's where the Rebbe was arrested. That's where he was in jail. They always had a Chabad presence there. And today Chabad is big in Petersburg. Outside of Petersburg, we're all over the place. And cooperating, building, doing, teaching, leading. And this new volume was put together here, sent to the Ukraine, and published in Kharkov. So if these aren't miracles, what are? And let me conclude with a vort, the Litvaken and the Hasidim. In the 1950s in New York, people were talking, great things are happening in Crown Heights. You got to remember, the Rebbe was beginning, it was something new. Until this, the sixth Rebbe came to America, he got it started, but all right, there were a few thousand. The seventh Rebbe took over, and I need not tell you what the last Rebbe accomplished. So, and from YU, a group of us fellas, we were looking, seeking, searching. Many of us did not have parental guidance. It's not that we're balei tshuva. It's hard for me to explain this because we're living in a different world. But our parents, born and bred in America, my father played sandlot baseball with Hank Greenberg. Do you know who Hank Greenberg was? I hope so. Do you know my own children, grandchildren? Yeah, you know, Kol HaKavod, born and raised here, to know who Hank Greenberg was? That's an accomplishment. So we didn't have parental guidance. We could choose whatever we wanted. So from MTA, a whole group of us went to 770 for a Fabringen. No, a chassid will tell you the Rebbe had Ruach HaKodesh and knew that there were a bunch of YU wise Aleks there. I'll tell it a little differently. One of the Rebbe's kabbayim whispered to him, Rebbe, says da a group from Yeshiva University. There's a group here from Yeshiva University. It was Yutet Kislev right before Hanukkah. Our next Chag, Mar Cheshvan is called, I was taught as a kid, why is it called Mar Cheshvan? Bitter, there are no holidays, but our next holiday is Hanukkah. So the Rebbe said, I'm living it in Yiddish, but I'm saying it in English. The Rebbe said, we have to thank God that the Maccabim were Hasidim and not Litvakim. And he's looking right at us. And we're wondering, no? And the Rebbe says, and you can imagine, if the Maccabim were Litvaken, they would have come to the Beis HaMikdash and they would have seen there's no cruse of oil. The Gemara in Second Perek, Masechet Shabbos, Shabbat, my Hanukkah, no cruse of oil. It'll take us a week or so to get the oil. And they explain, the Ran explains, it takes 3 days to go to the Galil. You can't be Mechallel Shabbos. 3 days to come back with the fresh olive oil. What are we going to light the candles for? Onus Rachmana Patre. If you can't do it, God forgives you. Aye, but the Maccabim were Hasidim. They saw the situation and they said, Mitzvah habal liyotcha al takmitzena. When you have a chance to do a mitzvah, don't abrogate it. Don't wave it away. Don't give it up. You do what you have to do. What will happen afterwards, that's not your concern. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam. But you have to do the mitzvah right away. Thank God that we're Hasidim and not Mitnagdim. And Baruch Hashem, if we're sitting here in Israel, an audience like this, and I can't believe you're all here. When I saw the rain, no one knows how to find Gris. And Rabbi Lichtenstein, the first time I took him into this building, Rabbi said to me, Hamakom nifla, hamikum ason. Okay? So here, Baruch Hashem and such, look at the miracle that we came, we built, we did, we accomplished. Did we do it all? Absolutely not. But we lit the candles. The rest is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ad kan, I want to go one step further and introduce the man who will close it out. I've taught many students, and you know, the Hashgacha Pratit, there's certain students that you interact with, not just in the classroom, but there's a student sitting here with my student in the 60s. I interacted in East Brunswick with a student from the late 50s. So there are miracles in life. Alan Rosen was my student in BMT, the late lamented BMT, but it sets the stage for Torah Tshraga, and Torah Tshraga is in this building, so it's also part of what we're speaking about. And one of the Russians I mentioned, Yomo, Yosef Mordechai Gachman, went to Torah Tshraga in addition to now being in the Gris Kollel. And Alan, should live and be well, has devoted himself to Shvut Ami for many, many decades now. And he is one of the mainstays in the office that raises the funds to make Shvut Ami possible. And I'm going to ask my dear student, Alan Rosen, to end off the evening.
Okay, before Rabbi Rakefet starts to sign books in a few minutes, I just want to share a few words. I want to thank Yeshiva University and Stephanie Strauss for organizing this event. They've always been very helpful, and it was a pleasure to work with them. I want to thank Rabbi Rakefet, the master teacher of Torah, 58 years of giving amazing lectures like this. It's absolutely unbelievable. My first day in Israel 40 years ago, I walked into BMT. My head was spinning. I was in Israel for the first time. And someone walks up to me and says, my name is Rothkopf. There's this teacher, Rakefet. Stay away from him. I didn't know what he was talking about. But I didn't listen to you. Your classes were great. Unfortunately, the next year, I spent a long time in the hospital. And one of the only joys I had in the hospital was that I got tapes of your lectures, the same tapes that made up this new book. As Rabbi Rakefet mentioned, he spent 10 years working for the Mossad in Russia, and that inspired him to do something for the Russians who came here. He became a founding board member of Shvut Ami Center for Russian Jews. There's a very strong tie between Yeshiva University and Shvut Ami. Yeshiva University has My alma mater has fostered amazing leaders who have changed the Jewish world. And I think we can say the same thing, albeit at a smaller scale, about Shvut Ami, that 160 graduates who have, many of them had enormous, enormous impact in the Russian community. And that's an enormous, important investment. 70 years of communist rule obliterated Judaism in the former Soviet Union. The intermarriage rate, according to Natan Sharansky, is around 80 or 90% there. And it's, extremely, extremely important to reach out to these people. Elie Wiesel, who served as the honorary chairman of Shvut Ami for 30 years, until he passed away recently, wrote a book called The Jews of Silence. And he said, it's not the Jews of silence I met in Russia, but the silence of the Jews living amongst us today, meaning that we need to do something and make things happen for Russian Jews. Rabbi Rakefet has been very dedicated to Shvut Ami. He invested 3 years in this new book. He is getting nothing for himself. He did it all for the benefit of the work of Shvut Ami. And you have the opportunity now to be his partner in his work. We're offering, the book is not available anywhere else. It's our publication. At this point, not available through Amazon, not available in bookstores, just through Shvut Ami. We're asking, because of Rabbi Rakefet's dedication to the cause, we're asking if you can to pay 150 shekels for the new volume, or whatever you're able. There are also the two original volumes, which are available also, and there are special prices, of course, for students. Thank you all for coming today. It's wonderful having you here. May Rabbi Rakefet be zocha to give shiurim for many, many more long years, and God willing, successfully put out Rakefot Aron 4, God willing, and other svarim. Thank you.